This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio today is Kerry Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
In our nice air-conditioned, cool studio.
Well, it's a little air-conditioned in here. It's never quite the way it should be in this room because of the facilities we have here at WDET. But for sure.
Much better in here.
It's better than it is outside.
Yes,
where it is absolutely sweltering. We are now, I think, on day four of this heat wave, and the weather people say that we're not anywhere close to the end. I think this is supposed to go through next week.
Yeah. I was checking my weather app this morning. I use like the Weather Channel app, and they were saying that today, you know, we have a high of 86. It's going to feel like 92 degrees, and then tomorrow is going to feel like 94. And then I think Saturday on the app, it says 89, which sounds like it's going to start to get a little better as we get into the weekend and into next week. So, but either way, man, have you been out in this weather?
I've been trying to avoid it. I go out in the mornings and water the front and back gardens at my house. But other than that, I'm staying as much as I can inside. And I think a lot of other people are trying to do the same, and then trying to keep the indoors cool. That's one of the challenges as well, without like running the energy bill up to up to the sky. Today we want to talk about, though, some differences in the way we experience this heat. If you live in the city of Detroit, for instance, it's hotter in the city than it is in some other places. And that's for very specific reasons that we want to get into. But the reason this is, I think, important for us is that that becomes an equity issue when you think of who lives in the city versus who lives in the suburbs or even further out. There are lots of equity issues that have to do with race and poverty. When you add something like environment or climate on top of it, I think you invoke all of those other inequalities as being important to telling the story of how we live.
Yeah, and you got to consider the additional. You have to consider the additional resources that are necessary to address the additional heat that you feel inside these cities. And the concept I think we're really trying to get at is heat islands, is what they're called. It's a concept that says that built areas are hotter because they don't have the natural environment, the trees, the ponds that simply cool down an area. But instead we have buildings, we have concrete, all these things that absorb heat and make it hotter. I'm not a scientist on this, so I'll leave it for experts to explain. But that's kind of the reason why we have the inequity that you're talking about there, why urban areas are typically hotter than outlying areas.
And the difficulty that we have in the city trying to keep ourselves cool, but also trying to make sure that the heat doesn't overwhelm people who don't have the means that other people have, right? The cooling centers that the city operates, the fact that libraries and things like that are staying open in a way that that welcomes people more so that they can find relief. You know, it's just not a given in Detroit that people can do anything about how hot it is.
And then on top of that, we have the storms coming. If we're talking about the weather, right? These storms are going to happen. That could mean that power outages could occur, which then could increase the likelihood that people don't have ACs to warm their homes. Also means that workers have to be out there in the heat trying to fix the power outages. So there's a lot of factors that go into this particular time, too.
So we've got two great guests that we're going to welcome to the show. Tell us about them, Kerry.
Our first guest is going to be Director Haseem Azari Jafari. He's the Deputy Director of the MIT Concrete Sustainability Hub, and he focuses on creating a more durable infrastructure for the future. And our second guest is Lawrence Sobson. He's a forester for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Urban and Community Forestry Program.
All right, so we're going to talk about concrete and trees.
Concrete and trees.
Next on Created Equal. Haseem Azari Jafari, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. And Lawrence Sobson, it's great to have you here as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sam, I want to start with you and talk about something that a term that the producers here introduced me to last week when we were talking about doing this show, this idea of a heat island. What is that and why does that have relevance right now?
It's a phenomenon that we observe in urban and very well developed areas, that the temperature is higher in the urban areas compared to the suburban areas, even within the same climate. And it's as a result of all the developments that we have in cities, buildings, roads, sidewalks, stuff like that, that we have created a large amount of impervious surfaces in the city that doesn't let the heat go off the city. And that's why we have the warmer climate inside the city area compared to the suburban neighborhoods.
Yeah. I mean, and if you think about it, cities are fundamentally different from other areas. You just start with population density and housing density. That tends to be much more concentrated in cities. So ambient and kinetic energy is higher, and that would make the heat different. But then you also, as you point out, you have all of these things that we do in cities in terms of how we build things and where we place things that make this worse or more pronounced. But this idea of heat islands, is that new? And I guess the reason I ask that is that climate change, of course, is increasing the average temperature globally, and that's one of the things that I think that we think about when we have heat waves like this. But is this making it worse? The phenomenon, I guess, of this heat island dynamic, does climate change the way we ought to be thinking about that?
Exactly. So as we see the increase in the temperature and the temperature rise in urban areas, we see that the urban heat island effect intensity will increase as well. The way that we choose the materials for our city surfaces has been impacting the urban heat island significantly. So the darker the city surface, like pavements or building envelopes or even building roofs, the more heat we absorb in our city areas, and therefore the temperature will rise more significantly. So there are multiple factors from climate change perspective, the increase in the temperature as a result of the climate change has intensifies the urban heat island effect, and also the way that we choose our materials or in general our city surfaces, built area surfaces, will impact the intensity of the urban heat island, and it has been intensifying over the past few decades.
Yeah. So what are the design elements of our built environment that are really problematic? Is it just about surfaces, or is it also about the way we plan and place things in cities?
That's a very good point that you mentioned. So there are multiple factors in terms of the city geometry or morphology, like how dense the neighborhoods are. If we have a denser neighborhood, then we trap more heat between our buildings in a given neighborhood. If we have less greenery space or urban vegetations, then we have less shades in our building than in our built environment, and then we will absorb more heat. So these are some of the intervening parameters that will impact the intensity of urban heat island effects.
Yeah. I'm talking with Hassam Azari Jafari. He's the deputy director of the MIT Concrete Sustainability Hub. That's a research team at MIT. It's focused on creating more durable infrastructure for the future. We're also talking with Lawrence Sobson, who's a forester for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Urban and Community Forestry Program. What we're talking about is the heat outside right now and the fact that it has a different effect on cities like the city of Detroit than it does in other areas. We're talking about why that's true, the things about cities that make heat a little less bearable, but also talking about what things we might think about or do differently that could make heat waves like the one we're experiencing, just a little easier to weather in cities like Detroit. We want to hear from you as well during this show. Give us a call and let us know, first of all, how you're managing while the heat is as high as it is. It's a little unusual for us to have a heat wave like this as early in the season as this. June, it's late June still, is not usually when we see temperatures like this, more like end of July, early August. But give us a sense of how you're managing all of this. What are you doing inside your house to stay cool? What are you doing if you go outside, which some people still have to do, of course, when the heat is this high? Also give us a sense of what your experience is in the city versus in the suburbs. Do you notice that it's hotter in the city than it is in the suburbs? Do you notice things about the city that seem to make it hotter than it was? Also, I would love to hear from people who have memories of Detroit summers from long ago. I grew up here in the 70s and 80s. It was a different city then, and the heat, I think, was a little different. The way we dealt with the heat was a little different. We had some things in the city back then that we don't have anymore. I would love to hear memories of what that was like as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can make you part of the conversation that way. Lauren Sobson, I want to bring you into the conversation here. Your specialty is trees, kind of the opposite of what Hassam Azari Jafari is focused on. Give us a sense of the role that trees play in the way we deal with heat and how hot it is in cities like Detroit.
Yeah, so trees, I think the big factor is shade for the most part. A lot of people kind of consider trees to be either a given or an afterthought, and really trees in urban areas should be considered a part of long-term infrastructure. They're living, but they definitely provide a lot of shade and a myriad of other benefits, as well as stormwater mitigation, stuff like that, that helps cool down our areas, sometimes anywhere from usually from 10 to 15 degrees, which is a pretty considerable amount.
Yeah. So they say the best time to plant a tree, of course, is 20 years ago, because it takes about that long for a tree, many trees at least, to grow to mature size and presumably to provide the most shade. But they also say that the second best time to plant a tree is today, of course. What is the way we should be thinking about how we plan tree planting in cities like Detroit? I mean, we've been doing better in recent years, but of course, practices that we had in the past and things like disease and kind of wipeouts have affected the way that we're living right now.
Yeah, so in terms of how we're approaching things now, historically, especially in the Detroit area, there used to be a lot of elm trees, and Dutch elm disease came in and wiped them out. And then we had a bunch of ash trees we replaced those with, and then emerald ash borer was introduced and wiped those out. And right now we're seeing a lot of communities in Michigan to be predominantly maple in the canopy. And think of it as an investment. Mm-hmm. You're investing in your retirement, essentially, in a tree. You're not going to buy all of a single stock and hope it stays there for the rest of your life and beyond. We really want to diversify the species. And what species we're diversifying in, we want species that are a little more climate adaptable to what we're seeing, as well as non-invasive species. So invasive species are ones that could spread and overtake some trees, species that we like, and cause all sorts of issues and have very low quality. Like pear trees are one of the most commonly planted invasive species, and everyone loves their flowers and everything, but they're very difficult to maintain. They break a lot. They don't provide much value. They don't get very big. Versus a native tree called hackberry, which is gets a nice canopy, is much more resilient, is native to Michigan as well as climate adaptable, and is kind of a really fantastic tree and provides a high quality canopy compared to that of other species.
So give us a sense of how well you think we're doing in Detroit with tree coverage and with tree planting. I think you can't live here without noticing how many trees are being planted right now. I mean, there are a lot. Are we planting the right kinds? And are we planning in the way that we should for the future?
I think we are. Detroit's really moving in a really great direction. There's a lot of support from the federal government. The Inflation Reduction Act gave money to the Forest Service, which was then awarded directly both to the city of Detroit and to the Greening of Detroit that does fantastic work. And they got in total $19 million for trees for Detroit. And they've been planting great species with some great plans. We celebrated Arbor Day at Lasky Recreation Center and planted a microforest, which is a very compact, very small forest that's essentially meant to grow much faster. So when you say best time is 20 years ago, this stuff is supposed to get really big within 10 years. And there's a lot of people, a lot of nonprofit organizations that are really pulling for better tree care, better tree work. So Detroit's really on the right track. And we've been assisting in a bunch of projects through our grant programs. And American Forests is a group, national group, that has kind of put together this Detroit Tree Equity Partnership as well, where Ring of Detroit and American Forest people have been planting thousands of trees along Michigan's roadways just to make the city look better and to also combat the effects of climate change.
Yeah. And we want to talk a little more about that tree equity program a little later in the show. Right now, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about the heat and the way we deal with it in cities like Detroit. We also want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Call and tell us how you're managing the heat, how you're managing the heat indoors, how you're managing the heat when you have to go outdoors. Have you noticed the difference between how hot it is in the city and the suburbs? And again, I would love to hear people's memories of summers past here in Detroit. Keep saying things are really different today than they were then. We used to have things that we don't have anymore in the city. I want to hear about some of those things and talk about whether we might think about bringing some of them back to make it easier to deal with the heat. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag createdequal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about the heat today, the heat wave we're experiencing here in Southeast Michigan. think we're on day four of it. It is just the beginning, though. Weather forecasters say it's going to go well into next week. What we're talking about today is the difference between what the heat feels like in cities like Detroit and what it feels like in other places. There is a real difference. There are lots of reasons for that. We're talking about what those reasons are and whether we could make some change. We also want to hear from you, the listeners. Give us a call and let us know what you're doing to manage the heat when you're indoors, when you're outdoors. Also, whether you notice the difference between what we experience in the city and what we experience other places. You can give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. We've got two great guests with us. Hessam Azari Jafari is the deputy director of the MIT Concrete Sustainability Hub. That's a research team that's focused on creating more durable infrastructure for cities and other places in the future. We've also got Lawrence Sobson with us. He is a forester for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Urban and Community Forestry Program. I want to start with the phones in this segment. And again, 313-577-1019 is the number. Terry in Detroit, you're up first.
Hey, good morning, Stephen.
Hey, Terry.
As usual, another great program. I wanted to share that I've been in the city all of my 6 decades. And back in the day, when I was a kid, we had recreation centers all over the city with outdoor swimming pools. Mm-hmm. And we literally used to go to the center from the moment it opened until the time they kicked us out. And we played in the pool all day. We also had lawn sprinklers out. If there were kids in the house, there was a lawn sprinkler out, and we were running through the lawn sprinklers. None of us had air conditioning. None of us. That's in my true. Neighborhood on the west side of Detroit.
Yeah, it was kind of a rarity.
Yeah. So a little bit of water on you was the way we dealt with it. I wanted to ask your guests. First, I wanted to thank the forester for mentioning the Greening of Detroit and the wonderful work they're doing planting trees. I had a chance to volunteer with them, and I'd love it if all of your listeners would go to the Greening website and look for the volunteer opportunities. We all can plant a tree in Detroit. And I also wanted to ask the cement expert to comment about us going to asphalt and blacktop on so many of our roads and the impact that that makes on the heat issue.
Great questions, Terry. Who wants to take that first?
I can start.
Okay, go ahead, Hans.
Thanks very much for the question. I think that's one of the important factors that we as civil engineers can influence and help the cities and citizens to get the benefits out of the city surface areas. For example, as you said, the black asphalt top, for example, for pavement applications, will increase the amount of heat absorptions, and then it will result in more heat release during the night hours or certain afternoon hours, which makes our cities warmer and warmer. So the way we build our cities is very important for reducing the urban heat island effects. And we can use actually pavements as a very good example for increasing the equity from a sustainability perspective. If you can change the way that we are designing and choosing the materials for pavements, then we would equally bring the benefits to all the citizens in that given neighborhood. And it will really influence each individual living in those areas as well. So this is the health benefit that we can bring in order to reduce the temperature in those areas. And aside from the health benefit and giving an equal access to cool surfaces, making the pavement surfaces more reflective, therefore it doesn't absorb that much heat, we can also reduce the energy consumptions in the adjacent buildings in that neighborhood because of the temperature decrease. And that will result in, again, an equal benefit to all the residents who are, turning on their ACs during the peak hours, afternoon hours, and night hours. And if we can reduce the energy consumptions, then we would reduce the amount of climate change impact from the power generation, for example, the coal power plants or any other power plants that we are using to cool down our buildings in general. So there are multiple benefits here that we can gain by just rethinking how we are choosing different materials for building our future infrastructure, for example, pavements and roads.
Lawrence?
Yeah, so part of the work we've been doing is we've been working with a lot of planning groups and committees, like road committees and whatnot, and we've actually been trying to rethink kind of the design of large asphalt and concrete areas. So for an example, if someone wants to put in a big parking lot, trees can intercept that light and heat, and instead of the blacktop, and it won't radiate out nearly as much. And you may have to sacrifice, let's say, a dozen parking spots to do it, but the long-term effects, it'll look nicer, it'll be healthier for the area. That's the sort of stuff that we want to encourage, for sure.
Yeah. Terry, really appreciate the call and the question, but also the comments about what life was like here in the 70s and 80s when we didn't have some of the things that we have now, but we had some other things. The community pool aspect is huge. I mean, that was a big part of life in the city in the 70s and 80s, the number of rec centers we had. And as you point out, most of them at least had outdoor pools, and that was how you stayed cool. Also, the sprinkler on the lawn. I don't see a lot of kids doing that anymore, but I can remember running through the sprinkler too when things were hot the way they are right now. I want to get back to the phones here and encourage more folks to give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. Give us a call. Let us know what you're doing to manage the heat. If you notice the difference between the city and the suburbs, and tell us about your memories of heat here in Detroit. Next up is Kyle in Ypsilanti. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
So I also didn't have AC growing up, and I'm not that old. I'm only 40, and we always went down to the basement, or I kept a wet towel with a fan, and I would damp myself with the wet towel. Also, I don't let my son run through the sprinkler because my water bill goes way, way up. And I'm just like, no, we'll figure something else out, my guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question, and it's a little tangential to the heat topic, but it's on the trees. And I'm wondering if it feels like there's a lot of trees going down in storms,
mm-hmm.
and I've lost power, I want to say, 4 or 5 times in maybe a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, are the storms getting worse, and are the trees not really made for these kind of storms? Should we be investing more in trees that, that would thrive in like the Tennessee area, you know, that are kind of, I feel like that zone
right.
is creeping up north, and all of this feels true, but I don't actually know, is there any data to support that? I mean, I don't have any expertise. It feels true, but I don't know.
It's a great question, Kyle. And I don't know the answer. I'm sure Lawrence Sobson does, but this idea of whether the trees are sturdy enough to manage the, you know, one of the offshoots of this weather, which is these really intense storms that we're now 4 or 5 years into experiencing here. Lawrence, can you help Kyle understand how this all works?
Yeah, Kyle, that's an amazing question. That's absolutely fantastic. First of all, we do have a really good connection with the university climatologists, and pretty much what we're seeing in our models and what's going to be happening now is we are going to have more powerful storms, but less frequently. So like the summers, like as they go on, we're probably going to see a lot more time in between rain, but when we get rain, we're going to get a lot at once. And that will speak to the fact that a lot of our trees, like, and I used to work for DT doing the tree work. You could boo me all you want there, but I'm in this job now, so I'm here to help people. A lot of them are these old silver maples because back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, these were planted. They were plentiful. They were cheap. They grew fast. Everyone thinks they want a really fast-grown tree. I would say I wouldn't, because the faster it grows, the longer those cells are in that tree structure. And that makes it more prone to breakage and stuff like that. DT statistics-wise, 90% of your power outages are from just silver maples, that specific tree species right there. It's usually because those branches will break, and they're very light wood, and they'll fly into the wires and cause a huge, huge mess. So really, we do kind of want to take a look at trees around southern Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, and be like, hey, yeah, these are some species that are doing well there. It's the theory is called assisted migration. We may want to plant some up here in this area. And one tree that I really like instead of like silver maples or something is a little more sturdier wood in a black gum or black tupelo tree. I think they're really fantastic. They grow in a column-shaped habit, which makes them a lot stronger in terms of their form, as well as the fact they still get that deep, deep red in the fall that we all love to see from our maples. So, and it's very climate adaptable. It's native to Michigan, technically, but it's not super well spread. So, yes, we are looking at that, and we do have a developed DNR recommended and non-recommended tree species list based off of stuff like that on our website at www.michigan.gov/UCF.
So, Lawrence, I also want to get back to this question of tree equity and the tree equity score, even, that has been developed by the American Forest nonprofit. I think that speaks to the things we're talking about in terms of how we have trees, how we keep them, and what they do for us. But let's start with what a tree equity score is and what it means.
Yeah, so tree equity score is essentially a tool that was developed by American Forests, and it's essentially bases tree canopy off of other social factors, like the amount of seniors living in the area, the heat disparity, people of color, stuff like that. And it is a really neat tool to help us target areas that really need canopy off of historical redlining and communities that are poor and just haven't had the ability to invest in planting trees or taking care of them. And historically, the city hasn't done that. So
for instance, when we look at that tree equity score here in the city of Detroit and here at WDET, where we are kind of in the center of town, we have an 85 score, which is pretty good. That's pretty high. But if you move just a few blocks away, places like Eastern Market have scores as low as 57. And what's interesting about that to me is that it really is almost block by block when you're thinking of who has adequate tree coverage and why. It almost suggests that something sort of random has happened to either plant trees in the first place or to take trees out, right? To get rid of trees, either through disease or storm or other things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in my mind, a problem of economics. Like, you look at these large silver maples, you look at these invasive pear trees, and they come with a quite high cost to maintain. So the math works out where just take it out. But then you have the opportunity cost of not having a tree there and the shade it provides, and it just costs more money to put one in. So it kind of fuels its own culture of not planting trees. So just because of the poor decisions on the species that were planted before it.
Yeah.
So definitely we are doing our best to educate and be like, hey, no, this is like one of the most important parts here. You want something that's really hardy. You want something that's going to stand the test of time and really provide that shade for you.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Hesa Mazari-Jafari of the MIT Concrete Sustainability Hub. Also with Laura Sobson of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Urban and Community Forestry Program. Also want to continue to hear from you, listeners, on the phones and on social. Call and tell us about how you're managing all of this crazy heat indoors and outdoors, whether you notice the difference between heat in the city and heat in the suburbs, and also give us your summer memories of heat here in Detroit and Southeast Michigan. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking about the heat outside and how it's different for people who live in the city of Detroit and people who live in other areas. We've got Hesa Mazari-Jafari with us, Deputy Director of the MIT Concrete Sustainability Hub, and Lauren Sobson, who is a forester for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Urban and Community Forestry Program. I want to hear from you, the listeners on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. And you can go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. Hesa, I want to talk about concrete a little more and the idea of sustainability. You know, in some people's minds, I suppose, concrete and sustainability maybe don't go that much together. A lot of folks would say we need less concrete in cities, and that would also help with the heat and climate. But you believe that concrete can improve a city's resilience to climate change and heat waves and extreme weather. Talk about why that's true.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. So when we think about the materials choice from a civil engineering perspective, we think about how we can satisfy the requirements for a given structure, whether it's a building or a pavement or road. But at the same time, we need to consider the resilience and sustainability aspects in our decision-making process. While concrete provides a very solid choice and option for our infrastructure systems, we have to admit that all the building foundations in the U.S. has been built by concrete, and there is a reason for that, right? Because concrete is a resilient material. You can trust it and you can consider it as a foundation because of its phenomenal properties. And there are other benefits for concrete in terms of resilience and sustainability. There is one that we are just discussing about the extreme heat events and how concrete and its lighter color compared to asphalt or darker color pavement can improve the heat resilience in urban areas. There are other aspects relevant to the flood resilience, like if you want to make sure that after flooding, there is less issues associated with your roads and you can still provide service and the road is not closed, then concrete is an option that you can consider it for the future infrastructure development and even for maintaining and repairing the existing road network. I think that plays a crucial role here. So there are some certain inherent properties for concrete, for example, the stiffness, the smoothness, or the surface color of the concrete that can influence the sustainability and resilience of our built environment, and it can be part of our climate change solutions in urban areas. We see that different cities like city of Detroit or in other parts of the U.S., they have developed carbon neutrality roadmap. We don't see that pavements would be part of that roadmap and the amount of benefits that you can gain from the pavements as well. So I think concrete can play a crucial role in order to improve the sustainability and reduce the climate change impact.
So when we think about the storms that we have and how they're intensifying and how the damage from those storms is, of course, multiplying, what role does concrete play in that? I mean, I would imagine it's kind of a dual role, maybe. I mean, concrete doesn't prevent storms, obviously, but mm-hmm. but it also protects people from high winds and flying objects and some of the things that we experience because of these storms.
Definitely. So, thinking about it from a flooding perspective in a given city, when you have concrete pavements, generally. The storm and the pluvial or the rain flooding will cause a lot of washouts and issues with the pavement foundations that would result in cracking the pavements. In general, concrete can withstand those cracking. That's what we call it, a resilience option in general. Or when you're thinking about, hurricane-prone areas, for example, you have seen all these pictures from state of Florida after all these huge hurricanes that we see many neighborhoods were totally collapsed, and there were no buildings except a few ones. And when you look into those few buildings, you see that they are made of concrete, and concrete could withstand those huge amount of loads. So it saves a lot of cost and environmental impacts to reconstruct those buildings and bring back the neighborhood to its original shape. So from different angles, we see resilience benefits in general with our investments in concrete, I would say.
Yeah. So I mean, thinking about things like advanced concrete materials and the possibility of incorporating those into our cities, I mean, that's something we could do in the future. And it also sounds kind of expensive. But what kind of things could we be doing in a shorter window of time to kind of deal with concrete and how it affects all of these things?
Like in terms of the extreme heat events and urban heat island effects, like I said, concrete is generally more reflective than asphalt, therefore less urban heat island intensity in those neighborhoods that have concrete pavements. But there are other solutions that we can implement in order to make the concrete even more reflective. For example, concrete can accommodate the waste from other industry streams. For example, blast furnace slag coming from steel industry, which is a byproduct, which is a waste. It has lighter color compared to Portland cement, which is the flour that we use in concrete. If you imagine concrete is the cake, cement, Portland cement is the flour. So you can replace part of that cement with those slag materials from the steel industry. At the same time, you're solving some landfilling issues or circular economy issues. But at the same time, you will get the benefits in terms of the reflective pavement. So you make the pavement more lighter in terms of the colors, the surface color. Or, like I said, generally concrete is a versatile material. You can choose different types of stones. You have seen that concrete is made of stones and glues. The glue is the binder, mm-hmm. made of cement and water, but the stones are, gravels or sands. If you use a lighter color one for stones, then you make the pavements again as a body lighter in terms of the color, and therefore less heat absorption and more benefits in terms of the cooling and heating demands in different cities.
Yeah. Lawrence, I want to come back to you here and talk a little about a new grant program that is funded by the Inflation Reduction Act. What is that? Was that grant? And what does that have to do with improving the tree canopy?
Yeah, so the Inflation Reduction Act that passed a few years ago now provided money to the Forest Service, which in return provided it to our program for the state of Michigan. So the Michigan's Urban and Community Forestry Program, we received some, and we created a grant, which is a it's a match-free grant, which if you're in the realm of grants, usually they require some sort of match. Like, let's say you want $5,000, you have to put $5,000 of value to receive it. That's a barrier for a lot of communities that really need this money to do the great work that they want to do. So we're trying to remove as many barriers as possible, and it's eligible only for areas in Michigan that are considered federally disadvantaged. And we have a tool that we created, which is a mix of like five other tools on our website, and it's fantastic. We've never had more than $300,000 to give away in our grant problem program in a year, and we're giving away $3 million this grant round this year. So that application is out. If you're part of a municipality or nonprofit or tribal organization or whatnot, head on to our website or just Google us and you'll find it. And we're really excited because it's more area than you'd expect. It's a lot of Metro Detroit, but it's also like the entire northern half of the Lower Peninsula and a lot of the Upper Peninsula as well. So we are spreading this funding all throughout and really trying to get a lot of our communities in Michigan up to a kind of ground floor in which they have really good standards and education in place for their staff. So when this money isn't there in a couple of years, they're able to do work that they may not have been able to before, or at least not in the capacity that we want them to. So it's very exciting. It's unprecedented time. And yeah, it's kept me very, very busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. Okay, Hessam Azari Jafari and Lawrence Sobson, it was great to have both of you here to help us think through these heat islands and how we manage them during this unbearable weather here in Detroit and Southeast Michigan. Thanks to both of you for being here on Created Equal.
Thank you very much for having me. Stay cool.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I've eaten ice cream to stay cool today.
that's a great solution. So, Carrie, I have a good mind to go home and hook up the sprinkler on the back lawn.
Yeah.
As long run as, through it a few times.
As long as you're prepared for the water bill on the other side, yeah, according to Lawrence. Yeah.
I think at this point, I'm like, I'll pay anything to get some relief.
To get some relief, yeah. I think for me, too, hearing the types of concrete that may be in consideration for how to cool the air will make me look at these kind of road constructions differently. Like, we get our roads fixed all the time. There's always so much traffic. And it's always during the summertime. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's going to be something that they take into consideration more as we look at the materials that we use so that we can get some relief in our urban areas. Sprinklers, I want to bring up a point. Talk about sprinklers. We did sprinklers when we were a kid. My mom always told me about the fire hydrants, apparently, when they were kids. They would, like, open up the fire hydrant.
Sure.
And like, let the water run.
Or, like,
and
a neighborhood can. Kids. You could take a can and get the bottom off of it. You could hold it over the fire hydrant. It would make it like a hose, a really strong hose.
Sounds dangerous.
Well, it's dangerous. Stayed in front of it, and you talk about water bill. That water bill goes to the city. But it's not a little bit of water that comes out of those hydrants, and actually now get in a lot of trouble if you do that.
Oh, no.
Open up the hydrant and use it. They don't like that.
Yeah, well, I'll stick with the sprinkler idea. And then Lawrence had a good idea with ice cream, popsicles and ice cream.
Ice cream and popsicles, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got a couple more days left, so hopefully we don't have to.
We got like a week left.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we got some more time to get through it. I mean, 80 degrees isn't too bad for
that's
me.
Not too bad.
It's where I get uncomfortable.
It's about the heat index, though.
Like, yeah, how it feels.
It's so humid right now, too.
Yeah, it's true. The humidity makes it really, really bad. So, yeah. Hope people get out and get in and get some relief from the heat.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us on Created Equal. We want to note that Detroit's cooling centers are listed on WDET.org and on the city's website. You should really go check those out if you're having a hard time staying cool. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and by David Lines. Our engineering is done by Nate Bender. The audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is from Sam Bobie. And Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.